Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
Mane everywhere I go. You're gonna light my candle, son. You're gonna make it shine. You're gonna lead me to.
Hey, you're listening to Live from the Path. Coming to you from the Pathway Studios here on Johnston proper. Oh boy, it's been a real rickety cart type of operation up to this point.
It's been a day.
Yeah, it's been a day. So you notice it, like there's an empty chair where Tiny Tim once sat. Mike, where Mike was, he's locked himself out of his vehicle. And so he lives like forever away. And we tried to break into this thing. We used, what was it, the piano hinge that I found in the truck?
Yeah, the piano hinge. And then some like floorboard.
Dan, luckily, here at the church, has got a number of sundry items. He's got like a couple screwdrivers. And so we had a floor threshold that we thought it worked too.
It would have been perfect.
Right. Yeah. There's no reason that didn't work.
Yeah. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah. It was disappointing. We got it in there and we got it poked on the old unlock button and no go.
On both sides of the car.
Yeah.
Like we hit both passenger and driver's side front door unlock buttons, saw the buttons depress. Tried to lock the doors and heard the sounds happening, but for some reason, it would not unlock.
Not interested.
No. Yeah. Not even a little bit. No budge.
It was a bum. Anyway, so, and then, whatever.
The duct tape trick did not work.
Well, yeah, the duct tape trick. I'd be interested to hear if anybody's ever had any success with this duct tape trick. Because it seemed to be one of those things that's like, oh, duh. Of course that would work. Why have I not thought of that before?
Ben found one on the TikTok.
Yeah.
And you saw it like happen?
Yeah.
What the heck?
Yeah.
All three of us were like full bore trying to pull that window down and nothing. We even used Gorilla tape.
It looked like he had a little kind of just tugged on it. And is that what kind of broke it loose, you think?
We're three grown men. We couldn't make a budget.
Well, this guy, just real quick on this tip in case you ever want to try it. He took like five or six pieces of duct tape, about 6 inches down, and then a pretty decent tail. Right next to each other. So we scattered them out throughout the window so we could have three dudes kind of evenly pulling. But right next to each other. And then another three or four rows on top of the tape against the window.
Okay.
And then you take the tail and kind of, twist it together so you got one good pulley. Yeah. And then he just kind of pulled down. And it didn't work up front. And then it shifted down. And I was flabbergasted.
Yeah, we were starting to make fun of him. And then it went.
Yeah, and then it worked. Totally fine. Okay.
All right. I'd be interested. Have you ever tried breaking into your own vehicle?
Yeah.
Not somebody else's?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Have you ever had any success trying to get into your own vehicle using potentially pieces of a piano or duct tape, creating some kind of lattice work that you understand physics more than we do? I'd be very interested to hear if you've had any success in that. Or would you like to just make fun of us?
Yeah.
Because we are also willing to accept that. You're welcome to send us a text or a call on the Bob Eisenhower Live from the Path complaint line, 515-517-0085.
Yeah, yeah.
We'd love to hear from you.
Call or text. Let us know what's been your experience on breaking into your own rig. Have you ever been
successful? Not anybody else's. Don't tell us that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe. If you want to confess to us.
I'm a mandatory reporter.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, be careful.
Okay. I'll check it first.
We'll check it first. We'll delete the text.
Okay. All right. Thanks for coming to Life from the Path tonight. Here's what got going on the show. So, Booba, you have a story from your past.
Yeah.
A lament.
Yeah. Ooh. I had a heartbreak. I was grief-stricken. In the last few days because of some stuff in my past. And it's funny because what I would have expected this to turn into was just this big old pile of shame that like made me like just angry at myself and then it did not give any actual edification to my life.
Mm-hmm.
But the Lord seems to have like struck a soul chord, if you will, that just grabbed a hold of something in me that just went like, wow. Like, I'm going to keep in mind for the future so that I don't have another thing in 10 years where I'm soul-stricken again.
Yeah, right.
For this situation. Yeah.
Okay. All right, good. Also, I was at a I was at a conference. I've heard of it. It's called Hutchmoot. It was super cool. And so I thought maybe I'd share just a little bit about what I took away from that. It's a it's put on by kind of it's an organ. It's put on by kind of it's an organization that was founded by Andrew Peterson. I don't know if you're not familiar with him. He's a singer-songwriter. But maybe a song you might recognize from his is He Worthy? It's like a congregation thing where like there's a call and response during the whole thing.
Sure, yeah.
And so he also is an author. He wrote, if you got younger kids, there's a series of books called The Wingfeather Saga, which is just excellent. It's very well done. And the audio version, he does the voices and stuff, and it's super cool. And it's is it Angel or like one of those networks is carrying it, or like you can watch it. They're turning it into to a show. Anyway, it's like a art and music and community and get together.
Mm-hmm.
But like it's not quite a conference like how to be an artist. Like it's not that. It's not how to be a writer for your life or something, or like how to write for Jesus. It's not that either. Like it's just a get together of which people they're teaching. They've got sessions. Hutchmoot.
Hutchmoot.
And it's pretty difficult to get in, to be honest with you. I figured out why by the time we got there because me and my oldest daughter and I went, and I'm guessing there's like 300 people there. Daughter and I went, and I'm guessing there's like 300 people there or so. And it used to be that it maxed out at like 100, and tickets are hard. I'm guessing there's like 300 people there or so. And it used to be that it maxed out at like 100, and tickets are hard.
Yeah.
Like they're difficult to get, but they sell out within like a minute or something once they release them. And then as people decide that they're not going to be able to make it or whatever, like you can get on a backup and pick some up. Yeah. And that's how we got it, is just someone goes, hey, there's 6 tickets available, and I just bought them directly. But anyway, I do have some interesting things that I took away from that maybe I'll share.
Yeah, great.
Okay, and then we've got some advice on Dear Life from the Path, and I think that might be it. We might cut you loose.
Yeah,
we'll see. There was an article around why young women are leaving the church, but I think I might wait on that one. Maybe we'll pick that up next week.
Okay.
Okay. So Buva, tell me about this lament.
So. Within the last couple of days, something just kind of randomly started creeping up in my heart, to where I feel like in my walk with Jesus over the last like year, very much has changed. And then even more so over the last couple of months, it's just been, I mean, just awesome. Just really amazing what I'm just being able to watch what God's been doing has been so cool. And within the last couple of days, it just started to hit me that I'm like stricken with grief at how lazy I've been.
Mm.
Like at how much time I've spent focusing on me and like what is wrong with me and what wrongs have been done to me and all this different stuff, just so like broken down in shame and guilt and sin. And like I understand that I've had to go through the kinds of things that I've gone through to grow, and I recognize that entirely. But there's just this level of pain that I'm feeling that just goes, man, like I've wasted years. I'm in my 30s now. I wasted the vast majority of my 20s just being so self-centered, mm-hmm. so selfish, so like focused on me. And nowadays, the stuff that the Lord does in a day is just astonishing to me. Like, it's astonishing to me. Even in little, small things that, like, it's not important to talk about because it's all God's work. It's just great. But, like, as in the details aren't important to go through right now. But seeing that the Lord can do so much work in just 12 hours of being awake, and it kills me that if I could have spent the last 15 years
mm-hmm.
doing that kind of stuff, like, not because I'm trying to count numbers or not because I'm trying to just see a big field of people that I've helped or whatever. No selfish gain there, just sadness and grief. And not shame, thankfully, because it's not like sending me down this sin cycle of going, oh, it's all pointless. I just screwed up the last 15 years. Why would I even try now? Blah, blah, blah. But just, man, my heart hurts. It hurts for all of that lost time. And I think God's, I don't know, I don't know if I said the Lord, you know, plucked a soul chord. I don't know. It just certainly is something that I've been thinking over the last couple of days. And it's interesting because I wish I could go back in time. I wish I could just go back to me sitting in this room 5 years ago and just be like, dude, the second that you start to feel or get to a point where you trust God so much that, like, every day doesn't have to be a relentless pursuit of safety, that, like, you get to a point where it's just walking with him, and then you see him move, and it's beautiful, and it's majestic, and it's mighty, and it's amazing. Oh, gosh. It just makes me sad for the time that I've lost.
You know what, though? I think what you'll find is, you know, 5 years from now, you're going to feel the same way.
Oh, absolutely. Right.
Because every time you make a new level, you're like, dude, what took you so long?
Right.
You know, I mean, I've done it my whole life, you know. And you look in the mirror one day and go, oh, man, what a waste.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the beauty of a patient father. He just, you know.
It's true. It's a good point.
Guides us along and uses us as he can, as we'll let him.
Right.
And
yeah.
As we let go, he uses us more. And, yeah.
Yeah, man, it's just been, and that's interesting because it's something that I've said aloud and I've thought many times before that, like, it's for me, it's never been an anger against my selfishness or anything. I'm starting to understand that, but it's always been like, man, I was dumb back then.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like 5 years later, man, I was dumb back then. And then 10 years later, man, I was real stupid back then. And it's just been interesting to kind of watch that unfold, if you will, as I grow and I mature and I learn to trust him more. And I learn to just submit my day to him and just be like, Lord, this is yours. Like, I am yours. I am your tool to use and not your will in my life. Just, I want to see your will. And then how does my life line up to that? And like watching that kind of stuff move has been super awesome, and I hope that I sit here 10 years from now and say the same thing, to where I'm like, man, I barely trusted him. Like, I had no idea. I had no idea the kind of things that he was going to do, and he just works in such beautiful ways.
Yeah, I don't know, Dan, do you remember any time in your life where you distinctly thought or felt that?
Yeah, I mean, multiple times. I'll look back, I'll have some shift of thought or something, and you think, well, what took me so long to get there?
You know,
I mean, and I've been like the straight and narrow guy, you know, straight-laced guy. Like, I started preaching when I was 20.
Sure, yeah, right.
I mean, I've done all the right things, you know, and still, I just turned 60 a couple months ago, and I sit there and think, I'm just figuring it out, and I'm like, well, why couldn't I have done this 40 years ago, you know?
Right.
Oh, and gosh. It's not regret. It's just like, okay, well, thanks for being patient with me, God.
Yeah.
I hope you give me another 20 years because I'm really enjoying this. This is so much fun, you know?
Oh, that's so true.
Yeah.
That's so true. Absolutely, man. Like, I mean, years ago, I would have looked at this with just shame. And nowadays, I'm like, oh, my gosh, Lord, what you can do in a day.
Yeah.
Give me 20 years of those days.
Yeah.
Like, I'm excited to be 15 years from now sitting here and saying the same thing, where I'm like, guess what? I walked obedient. I had no idea what trust and obedience was still. But, like, I started to get a glimpse of it, right? It started to kind of get that just, like, far off understanding of this, and he's just so good, and is just, oh man, I'm dumbstruck by it.
I think part of it is the longer you are in this, in your faith, and you're striving to grow, the better you hear his voice.
Sure, yeah.
You know, because there's so many voices. Yeah. You're in your 20s, you hear all these voices. Voices from the past floating through your head, and it's all the voices, and you start narrowing those down. Okay, that voice, get rid of that one. That one.
I know where that comes from now. I'm not listening to that anymore.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know if we ever figured out till we get there. We open our eyes. Oh, there you are. You know. It's like, oh, you know, and we're done here. But I think that's the adventure. That's part of the excitement of the journey is figuring out, how do I tune out all those other voices, and how do I tune in to the Father and hear him?
Yeah, no, and I think that's fair, and that's interesting because the whole hearing the Father's voice thing has been such an interesting thing for me recently, from the perspective of and that's actually a really good way to put it, Dan. There's so many voices.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's so many things. For me, if I ever feel like I've heard from the Lord, I immediately get this rhetoric of, like, self-doubt that goes,
well, yeah.
No, that's not what God
that's
would
dumb.
Say to
that
you.
Can't
that's
be
not
that.
How that works. Yeah. Or, yeah. No, that's just your brain that's trying to make this happen. Or you just put John Goodman's voice in your own head. Like, that's not God. Like, what are you you talking
John
about?
Goodman.
I don't know. It's just, it's the first thing I thought of, whatever. But like, it's interesting because I feel like I'm at that place in my walk where I'm starting to hear him. Like I'm really starting to be able to discern his voice. And it's such an awesome thing.
Yeah.
Like it's so awesome because I've wanted that. I've longed for that for so long. And I never, and I know that I don't understand this still. And there's still 30 years of growth ahead of me and another 50 after that. And then eternity walking with him. Right. Like I'm aware of what I don't know. Right. You know, ignorantly incompetent. I don't know what I don't know sometimes, but, As I'm first starting to kind of understand that, like, I was standing in the way. It wasn't that he wasn't talking. Like, I was being so disobedient, and, like, I was refusing to give him everything. Like, I really was, because it was a trust thing. Like, I did not trust him with all of it. Mm-hmm. I trusted him with some of the things that I couldn't explain away, and I trusted him with some things that, like, I couldn't handle myself. And he had to continually reveal to me that, like, I don't just want the things that you don't feel capable of. Mm-hmm. Like, I want all of it. I want every bit of it to you submitting all of your day, every day. Don't be a farmer that plans the next 20 years. Be a day laborer that's just walking in my field and let me pay you your wages for the day, which is a relationship with me. And it's so beautiful because I can't wait for another 40 years of being able to understand that and being able to hear that even more. And I'm giddy. Like I'm like a little kid and I'm so excited about it.
Yeah, I was trying to think that I think I've had that same thought, and it was around not any particular thing, mm-hmm. but more around where I felt like earlier parts of my life I was trying to figure out or acclimate not a measure of success necessarily, mm-hmm. but like all the things that weren't following Jesus.
Sure, yeah. Uh-huh.
Which I'd like whatever you have to live there's a practicality to your life, of course.
Yeah. Right.
But like, how much time did that have my mind?
Yeah.
How much of my money did it have? How much of my worry did it have?
Right.
And I do look back on those things and go and maybe miss them a little and go, look, I don't know what would have come, but mm-hmm. But boy, I really wish that I could say no to all the other things that feel like I can look back with clarity and go, those feels like they're just clogging pipes, man.
Yeah, right.
Like they were things that didn't particularly matter. And you know what's interesting though? Here's where the benefit of being a Calvinist is you can you get the benefit of being able to go, look, all the steps that brought you here were what had to. Like there just wasn't, there weren't any particular options. Like it's now, and even beyond like a Reformed theology, there is a thought that like, you know, you could only be able to look back in wisdom for having gained it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so for having, and it took these things
sure.
to have done so, to have gained it and come to the realization, which to Dan's point is why it keeps happening. Like you live
right,
another.
Yes. Increase my faith and my wisdom. Of course, I'll be able to see what I was lacking.
Right. Yeah, you live another 5 years and you go, I was closer, but still not quite right. And if God would give me Noah a number of years, maybe I could actually pull this thing
yeah,
together.
Exactly. Right. That's true. That's invigorating though. Like that's invigorating to think that like for the longest time I've been exhausted from the perspective of how long is this life, but like when trying to even walk faithfully with him and like let him lead me and do this kind of stuff, it is completely flipped that on its head to where it's like, oh Lord, give me more time. Like give me more time. Obviously recognizing that it is such a different experience than the Lord originally intended, right? As we're walking with him now, than when he was with us, right? Like walking alongside us, Adam and Eve style. Like I long for that now, but I also long for the work of the days, which means that like I want, for the first time in my life, I'm invigorated so much to say that like I want this for the people that I see that are hurting around me. And like, I've never had that fire like that before because like I've always wanted that for the people around me. And I've always thought, well, yeah, the point of this is to get more people in the kingdom. Like, of course, that's the deal. It's the good news of the gospel. And I love that. But it's been such a a different experience as that has been like lit a flame in my soul and in my heart that goes, oh, no, I'm not just doing this so that you can be at a church next to me. I'm not just doing this so that like I can check you off my box of people that I'm trying to witness to. Like I desire for you to be able to walk in the safety and the surety of faith in Jesus Christ and like the ability to this world changes when heaven is with you, when Christ, having come down to bring the kingdom at hand, is here. This mortal world changes when it is identified by your name rather than by the lost and sinful nature that we have. And like there's such beauty in that name that says, oh my God, I'm so excited. Like I can't wait for people to do that a lot, whether it's me bringing them or me just being able to watch it happen because it's so beautiful in their lives.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy. It's just so crazy what's opening up for me right now. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Just awesome.
Yeah. It's one of the things that then reminds you, like you get to a point where you realize, appreciating that older, there's a wisdom in older. There's a, like people.
Right. Yeah.
Because they think of the knock on, the biggest risk is that you look and go, oh, well, this person is 20 years or 30 years older than me. The world has moved on without them.
Yep.
But like I just said, that most of the thing where I got probably tied up or at least thought I spent my time with an imbalance are things that like the things that are changing about the world are the things that are probably not worth all that much keeping up with.
No.
All the things that I really care about in life at the end of like that Jesus cares about, that at the my bones I care about,
yes,
are things that were the same 30 years ago and 30 years before that and 300 years before that.
Same God.
And so with those things being true, what do I like? I'm missing out. You can often miss out on wisdom. I was listening to some music today, and I was looking a little bit up about a guy who had written the songs, and his first album I think didn't come out or wasn't commercially successful till he was like 35 or 40.
Wow!
And it made me think that like how many times is the culture being led around by a 22-year-old dude?
Mm-hmm.
With his thoughts on life, uh-huh. And we're like, yeah, this is how it is. That's not how it is.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not how it freaking is
at
all.
Nothing at 22. Yeah.
Right.
Nothing.
And like, and it's not. It's perfectly great to be 22. Like,
right.
Like live it. But but is that where our wisdom
right.
comes yeah. from? Is it through the bones of a man who's not seen much? And like some people have totally lived beyond their years.
Sure, yeah,
absolutely. But it just made me think that you like, especially for singer songwriter types. I thought, you know what, that's probably about right. I probably want to listen to this dude when he's 40,
yeah,
not when he's 21,
right?
And like one of the things that came out of it, there was that followed kind of the theology of some of his tunes and stuff, and like it's rock solid. The guy's great, but like one of the things that has changed is like earlier in his music, there's kind of a looking towards heaven, and then as he gets older, what you start to see is looking towards heaven as a restored earth.
Yeah,
so right. It's a shift. It's a shift in theology. Yeah.
It's not the pie in the sky anymore.
But it's right. But there's it's odd because it's just as wild.
Right, yes,
it's
exactly.
Just as wild of a thing to think. But it is much more practical, actually. It's much sure. more hands and feet way of, and I think accurate. I think biblically accurate way of Agreed. Thinking about it. And so I thought, that's right. And so I mean, not to dissuade you from talking with younger folks. It's just don't leave the folks that are 20 years plus, 30 years plus, 40 years plus off to the side. Like they don't look like the culture anymore. But that's probably just fine. In fact, there's probably a lot of wisdom in that anyway.
Yeah, they've kind of transcended it.
Yeah.
I think part of the key to growth spiritually is getting to that point where you can say it out loud, but when you actually grasp more that I'm in eternity right now.
Yeah.
I'm already an eternal
soul. Right, I'm not in a waiting room.
I mean, it's not like I'm going to die. I mean, my body's going to do something different, but
sure.
Who I am will never end.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and it just makes you look at life differently. It makes you look at people differently. It makes you look at circumstances differently.
Yep.
And it adds a depth to it that and it gives you more mission. I mean, because
sure.
more kingdom, and it's like it just changes everything.
Yeah.
Rather
That's
than,
totally
oh
true.
No, what's stock prices today? Or who's going to win this election?
It's
or
all hevel.
Who's going to do, we'll know the price of gas. all that's irrelevant.
You know? Yeah. Gosh. Actually, it's super interesting you said that, because that has been one of the things that's come up, that oddly came up, at least for me, out of 1 Samuel with Hannah. But also, I think, is often an issue with families and relationships is a lot of times tension and struggle comes from unmet expectations, mm-hmm. almost mm-hmm. always associated with time frames.
Yes.
Right? Like, so an example would be if you're a wife and you want your husband to take out the garbage, and you say, hey, will you take out the garbage? And he says yes. In that man's mind, he probably very much intends to take out the garbage. But what he didn't say out loud was, okay, I'm going to wait till this part of the show's over, or I'm waiting for a call from Ted. And once I get off the phone with Ted, I'll do it. Like, it's a yes. But you come back in 5 minutes later and that garbage is still there and you're pissed. You're like, why are you sitting on your butt? You said you would take. Now, what became one, you're ignoring me and you're dishonest. You told me you would do it and you didn't. But the only reason that came to reckon right then is because you had in your mind a time frame mm-hmm. of which something would get resolved. And if you would have waited it out an hour, he would have done it. His yes was meant to be a yes. And then it would have happened. And so did the thing you want to have happen, did it happen? Yes, I think it probably would have. The tension came because of the expectation that wasn't met, and it had to do with the time pressure. Now, relationally, the lesson is you got to talk things out. You got to make sure you say things out loud. And frankly, if 1 hour is just as good as 5 minutes, then what do you care? Then let him take it out in an hour.
Right, yeah.
But if you need it done in 5 minutes because you got a bunch of crap that needs to go in there, and you're like, hey, can you do this within the next few minutes because I got more stuff that needs to go in there? Okay. Right. But it's a super microcosm. Okay. But like a lot of the times we get frustrated with people on how they're behaving because it's how long is it going to take? Some of our hope for people on whether they meet Jesus or not, like, yeah. I've been talking to this guy for months. What's months?
That means nothing.
Except for you thought of months. Yeah. I understand why you'd be frustrated. I'd understand that you want what's best for someone. But like, sometimes like where we end up with the anti-James, where you're being tossed around with the waves, it's because you followed a wave when it came in. You saw the second and you jumped on it and rode it, as opposed to staying on the shore going, boy, they really go up and down, don't they? You know what I'm saying?
Just a different perspective. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like it's not that it's wrong to have any sense of time.
Right.
But it is, you know, that where I lament, where we get huge ups and downs into the world, it's sometimes because we're following the waves about, as opposed to like having a more of an eternal perspective and saying, I will not allow my hope to be stolen just because so-and-so was a doofus today. Okay, I mean, I was a doofus today. Or now think about it, this ties into what you started with, Bhuva. You look back 10 years ago, and he's like, boy, I wish I would have handled some of that stuff differently. Yeah. And you just didn't have the wherewithal to do it. What if someone gave up on you 10 years ago?
Exactly right.
Or 15 years ago.
Exactly right.
Or whatever. Or my wife, like, holy cats, I hope I'm a better husband and father today than I was when I started. But like, luckily my wife was also new and did not realize how poor I was, right? But if she had the wherewithal or I had a wise person to go, hey man, I know what a good husband should look like and that guy's not there yet. You know what I'm saying? What if someone had given up on me because we pushed the time too tight?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so it's a hard thing because we want good things for people and we want them quickly. But like impatience and lack of thinking of things on like a much broader, a grander narrative scale causes us to give up on people when we shouldn't, causes us to make rash decisions over too short of a time frame.
Sure.
And, you know, like even harsh things, like terrible things that happen in relationships or like mistreatment or things like that. Like, again, if you're in a moment about something, it's very easy to make a decision that may not have been the same decision you made 6 months from now or a year from now or whatever. And so it reminded me of the 1 Corinthians 13, right? The thing that everybody says at the wedding. And I was reading it this week. Because we had a choose your own church adventure week at the old house church. And so we stayed home and I just taught something. And I went to that. And one of the things that struck me about that is like, we are way underselling this thing. we're like stupid weddings. Like this is everybody all the time.
Yes.
But like the key part of it is before he even gets to explaining what love is, Paul's like, look, if I have all the knowledge, but not love, it's nothing.
Yep.
And like, And so I was ticking through my mind, like, what are the things where I think, yeah, this serves God well? Well, I teach, so I have all the knowledge. I'm like, crap, he even called that one out specifically. like
this was the specific one he said not to.
Right, and it's like, or like, if I was so, you're generous, and like, I got 3/4 of my money, and I just give it away, and it looks very righteous and pious, and it may be good and awesome things to do in the world. But if your heart's not right, if you don't love and have, and care for people or kindness, and like then he starts talking about them, like, well, what does it mean to love somebody then? Being patient, well, crap, and being kind and not seeking after your own thing and not being arrogant. And so you think about all those things and then you start chucking through your day and like, what did I consider most important in my day today? Yeah. I got all these things to do. And immediately you should hear the voice of Jesus. He's like, you know what I care most about is how you do it. How are you approaching that? I would rather you get none of those things done today if you're going to be an unkind doing them, if you're going to be impatient doing them. And this all ties to what we're talking about because as Paul rounds it up, he's like, because all that stuff will go away. You know, you know what hit me as part of talking through that is that like at the restoration of all things, no one will care. They will not need me. They don't need Dan and I anymore to teach anything. Yeah. It's unnecessary. Wow. You know who they don't need? Prophets. All the things that are edifying and good for the church here will be completely unnecessary in the permanent relationship with Jesus in forever. And so even though they're important here, even though they're righteous things to do, it still matters how you do them in love because then Paul says, what are the things that are going to persist? Love is going to persist. Faith, hope, love. Right? Charity, hope. And so, but he's like, but above all, love. And so this was very interesting, part of the conversation at my place. And I think probably part of the conversation at many places is that like, if you were being honest with yourself, how often do you default to caring more about what you do and not how it's being done? And are you willing to say, I would rather not accomplish or make progress on any given thing if I was not going to do it with the right heart, with the permanent, the thing that would last, which is how I approached it and how I thought I treated people. And like, you know, did I look kindly? Did I think in love, lovingly about the people before I even got into it?
Sure.
Not just on defense going, I'm supposed to be patient today, but like, look at the person like you love them and do love them. And then those things will flow out of it. And so I just like so many of our relationship things are just so time pressured, and then they're coming out of trying to accomplish something. We need to be a better family. How are we supposed to do that? Well, we're going to eat dinner together. That seems like a great thing, man. But if you're not doing it with love as your foundation, then like that's not really the thing.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, it hung with me and nicely ties into this thing you started with.
Wow, man. Oh my gosh, that's so cool. Like that's seriously so cool because it's interesting to me as I think about my own life and very much like you're saying, like the kind of situations where if people would have given up on me when I was my hardest to love, like I was my absolute hardest to love, I would not be in this room right now. Mm-hmm. Like I just flat out wouldn't. And it's crazy because this has been so prevalent for me in youth ministry because very rarely do any of those kids remember a single thing I've said.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they just don't. They don't remember any lesson I've taught. They rarely remember anything a week later. Like, their life is, they just don't grasp that stuff, right? But, like, I've had kids that I've taught years ago reach out to me just this last week. And, like, it meant something to them that I was there. That, like, they did not remember the Proverbs that we talked about, right? Like, they do not remember the cool thing that I taught them about Elijah. Like, they just remember that I was there. And that's so true for me as well. Like, same with you, Dan. Like, you were my childhood pastor. Like, I don't remember a lot of the stuff that you said when I was younger, but you've always been there. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's stuck with me. Same with you, Ben. Like, and you and Mike as well has been the things that I've heard from you guys rarely ever hit the mark on, like, changing my life. But what they allowed for me was when I finally stopped listening to the lies of the world, and the world failed me. Like, it completely failed me. I then had to go, even logically go, well, what never did? Like, what never failed me? What never gave up? And the answer is God. But the way that he showed me that was very often through people loving me. Mm-hmm. Like people loving me when I felt unlovable. And any time that I would convince myself of that, logically I couldn't, because I had to go, but why are they still here? Why are they still calling me? Why are they still allowing me in their homes? Like, why do they still show me generosity and charity in moments when I've been disrespectful or have been fleeting and just a fart in the wind, mm-hmm. like just flat out truth. Yep. So, wow, what an awesome thing. And as I'm walking right now into work with this particular group of people that are fleeting, like they just flat out are. And stuff just, nothing sits, nothing hits hard. Yep. And so all they might remember is the fact that, like, I kept showing up. And it's such a beautiful reminder for me that it's the timeline. It's the long game of, like, you guys would have given up if you would have set timelines onto things on me. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't about the timeline. It was about the love that I was shown. And it played out in God's time. And yeah. So just wow, just amazing.
Yeah. All right, you're listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us so far. You got any reaction on the show, hit us up on the Live from the Path Bob Austin complaint line, 515-517-0085. Call or text, and we'd love to hear from you. Okay, I'm going to tell you, I won't spend too long on this, but I thought it was interesting, and maybe it's something that will help connect for some of you guys. So part of the reason I got on this conference business So my oldest daughter wants to be a writer, and there is not a lot of I get real itchy around Christian artist types. Mm-hmm. One, a lot of musicians, it just feels like it becomes Christian music is just a way of which they want to draw glory to themselves.
Sure, mm-hmm.
I've seen it so yeah. often. It's not true for everybody. There's some great people out there doing the work of Jesus, but not even just music. You know, a lot of So because my old son wants to be a writer, when you think, oh, how do I be a Christian writer? Well, like, I don't know. She's like, I don't want to write devotionals and pamphlets. I'm like, I wouldn't either. sounds like it sucks. Yeah, yeah. You know, it sounds boring. It uh-huh. just sounds boring. And like, we're oversaturated with people's yeah. thoughts that are just like they believe are uniquely tinged right on top of scripture. And so, like, I totally get that about her. And frankly, it felt a little disenfranchising to think that, like, it's kind of like the thought that, hey, what will forever be like? And I think if you take out of context some of the stuff in Revelation, that there's just a guy with a overhead projector that's got the words holy, holy, holy sure. on it. And then, like, next verse, same language, holy, holy, like doing this. And you're like, I mean, yeah, because God is good. But if we're being honest, does this feel like, wow, I want to spend my forever not really? And so it was kind of like that. And so I thought, and there has to be, like, I know there are people who are doing this well. And so we kind of looked around and stuff. And then, like, I think the other problem is also it's kind of difficult to find just artist communities types within Christianity.
Sure.
Outside of Christianity, there's just there's a wide variety of folk doing art. Art and writing and these types of things. As like where I came up through as an English major, and like just a real wide diversity of thought. Not that, but and not always the thought where I'd like, yeah, this is where I want to spend a bunch of time being formed, shaped by this type of thinking. And so there just isn't a bunch of that going on either. And so we're kind of looking around, and I remembered our family had read through the Wing Feather Saga that I mentioned earlier, and I just remember really liking them, and it's got some very cool Jesus overtones to it. I swear, man, I'm easily brought to misty eyes when like from unexpected places, like you catch a Christian overtone. We were watching Signs last night. You've ever seen Signs?
Yeah.
M. Night Shyamalan? Like, oh. And my oldest daughter caught it. She's like is Mel Gibson's in it? And she's like, does he only do Jesus movies? Because he directed the Passion of the Christ. And yeah. like, Signs is not a Jesus movie, but no. like the themes in there, totally. And so anyway, I'm looking around and I remember Andrew Peterson's stuff. And so I looked around, and he had created a publishing company called The Rabbit Room, and they're publishing like Christian fiction. And like one of the things I think to take away from it is that like it's not overt. A lot of his songs are, but like it comes from the premise that like God spoke twice. I get to read it and hold it. He spoke, the Bible is him speaking. He also spoke creation. I can look around. And Paul, this is the argument Paul is making. It's like, even if you didn't have these things in front of you, God spoke and you can see
sure,
it.
Sure, yeah.
And so, and I think about that when you're talking like, well, how did God speak? Well, he brings people to speak to me. Like, he's speaking. Yeah, and so I gotta be careful. You can obviously take that wrong and do sure. bad things with it. But in generally, there's this, like, as you think about, can you be a Christian and be an artist and not have a cross in every painting? Well, of course. You're delighting in the things that God has done.
Yeah, sure.
And so there's a freedom in that and thinking like, well, can I write for Jesus without being a pamphleteer? Yes. Yes, of course you can. And can it be children's fiction? The lead speaker at this thing was the lady who wrote, I think it's Catherine Patterson, The Bridge to Terabithia.
You
read that? She was there. This woman, funny as heck. She's like 90 plus years old.
That's amazing.
And she was talking about wonder. How do you cultivate one? She's like, why I write for kids. Kids could still have some wonder in them.
Yeah, that's so cool.
And there was actually one of these, I don't remember this from the story, but she gave an example from Charlotte's Web. And so Charlotte's Web is, you know, like the spiders writing the words to describe the pig
sure, yeah.
in the web. And there's a scene in the book where, you know, this has happened multiple times, and the lady goes up to is talking to her doctor or something, and she goes, that's just wild. It's wondrous. I can't believe all these things that these words that are showing up in the spider's web. And the doctor goes, I can't believe the web at all. Like being able to look at a spider's web and go, wow.
Yeah.
Like, have you thought about this? Have you stared at this thing? Because that's crazy how strong it
sure,
is.
Yeah.
It can be strung like 8 feet. And like this spider has obviously made some kind of death-defying leap to connect this web at your place, and you're like, and I just immediately popped in my mind how many times like my wife will go, hey kids, hey everybody, come out, we should look at this, like the sun looks really cool, and I'll be like, meh. And like, look, you don't have to be like a total tree hugger here, but if God spoke these things,
yeah, sure,
am I missing out on being often disconnected from them? I think I am.
Yeah.
I think I am, and I think the loss of wonder in being surprised by things and being just taken and not being so Jason Bourne about the world. Like, sure. Oh, I get it. I get how it works. Because I do get how it works. But like, what does that have to do with anything?
Yeah.
And so this is one of my takeaways from the thing. This we got there. These people are hospital, just awesome. Like you get in there, I usually don't like people greeting me at the door or whatever, but they're handing you stuff. Everyone got their own coffee mug. With their logo on it, and they have like an open coffee bar, like great coffees, not just like decaf in a pump, but
that's
like
cool.
You could order the mochas and all the stuff, and they're just like covering it all weekend or whatever. Do people must this at weddings? I had no idea. Sounds cool as crap for someone to have an open coffee bar, not
yeah,
just
right.
like an open liquor bar. Anyway, like it was just the whole place was cool. So we got in there, and like I'm praying, of course, as the thing is about to start. I'm praying for my oldest daughter, like help her to meet people that feel like her,
yeah.
And that it would be a place of encouragement, and that she would see you through the light of some of these things. And so sure. I'm praying for all the things that a dad would pray for. And then I got done praying, and I was about to say amen, and I thought, wait a minute, maybe I'm here for a reason. And so I said, Lord, I don't, you know, I'm here for her, and you know that. And thank you for that we're able to even do this. My work is flexible. We've got the money for the hotels. Thank you. But like, if there's something here for me, help me not miss it just because I think I'm here for her.
Sure.
And so that was one of the takeaways for me was to engage in active wonder, to not like so much of my life and all its facets are me explaining things.
Right.
Oh, I have to know how it works, and so that I can help teach it to help people understand, right? And I thought that lends to it a dissection of things in such a way that I often just jump past the wonder of things and the enjoyment of the wonder of things, just because I'm likely to turn around and try to explain it to a kid or a vice president at something or here or at a Sunday morning. And so that was a great takeaway from number one. The conference itself was super cool. They had all these artist types. So, you know, you got 300 artist types in the room. These people can sing. know what I'm saying? This isn't a rando gathering. Yeah. So, like, you know, they're doing four-part harmony on songs they've never heard before. And, I mean, I'm not. but it was just, it was so cool. And, like, I had not heard almost any of the songs that they did. Almost none. And, I mean, I wasn't, like, whistling in them later or anything. But it's like hearing... I think about like some of the hymns and some of the songs that they were singing as I think about poetry. I don't know a lot of poems. Like I know some.
Sure.
But if I hear someone like do one, like have written a very cool poem, I'll be like, boy, that was, there's something about the moment of that expression.
Sure.
That is often super cool. But I probably wouldn't like say it over to myself five times or put it on a towel or anything. Like it was, you know, but like just it's a moment of an exchanging of words and ideas in a fresh way that hits you in something that you probably would have agreed to on a test, but it wouldn't have stirred your soul. And like I just it was there was so much of that that was super cool. And like I'll tell you this about there's a lot of singer-songwriter types at this thing. There's a reason singer-songwriter types don't have hits on the radio. Because they use obscure references that nobody recognizes. They're like, I was at the 76 on East 22nd. I'm like, no one's been there, dude. Like, so there's an earnestness to it. There's also like a melody thing where like if you listen to all the songs on the radio and then you listen to a song some of these fellows have written, it just fades away at some point or like goes to a weird spot where you're like, that's not super singable. But that's what makes them singers. They're just very earnest singer-songwriter types. Yeah. And so I was listening to all this stuff and like there's poetry happening and hymns happening and all this kind of stuff in there. And it made me realize how much I love that stuff. And I have not, like one of the things that occurred to me is I have not picked up a fiction book that I've read all the way through for probably 15 years. And some of it's just practical. It's just practicality. Like I just don't have a lot of time for reading. And if I'm going to read something, Dan, you know how it is. Like we're in 1 Samuel. I'm probably reading 1 Samuel. And like even my Bible reading doesn't much go beyond that. I'm focusing on the thing that I'm going to teach. And it was like one of the takeaways I had at the final day of this thing, they had brought in a dramatic reading of a conversation between C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien. And it was a hypothetical view of like their final meeting. I don't know if you know like much about those guys, but like they were together at Oxford. Mm-hmm. C.S. Lewis was not a Christian, but he was in this kind of this writing group, and through the influence of Tolkien, he becomes a Christian. He's like wrestling with Jesus, and like some example that Tolkien gave as they were out walking, just like, oh yeah, I get that. And like he had walked away from the faith because his mom had died young. His dad was not very good. He had seen like some of the horrors of war and sure. Like seen his best friend like that he met kind of in the army or whatever get like blown up in front of him. And he's like, I just can't. There's not a God. There isn't. I can't. It's not believable. So anyway, he comes to this through these guys. And then they're part of a troop of guys who were writing and helping, encouraging each other and stuff. And like, you know, Lewis provided feedback on the Lord of the Rings and
yeah.
Tolkien didn't actually much care for Narnia. He thought it was like shallow and specifically this came up in like the reading was upset that Father Christmas shows up. It's like, it's a whole nother world. Why would there be a Santa Claus? It's like and so anyway, they were great friends and then they drifted apart and actually had a pretty hard break because C.S. Lewis marries a woman named Joy. Joy is from, I think, South Africa or something like that, and divorces an abusive man and has two boys and ends up in England, and they get married, and Tolkien is a Catholic, and so he's like, well, this is, it's wrong. Yeah. And he wouldn't refer to her, like using her name. He would not acknowledge her as a spouse, and it caused a great rift between these two men. And so anyway, they had this dramatic reading. It was very cool. I've not seen anything like it. It's kind of like a play, you know,
right,
with like
yeah.
a bunch of dudes in there. And like, they were, you know, using highfalutin, almost British sounding academic accents. And like, just the words and the repartee. It was delightful. And I thought, I love this. And my daughter kind of had a similar reaction. She's like, I don't, you know, stories are stories, but like, I just like the words. I like the words they're using.
Sure.
Like, it's fun. I wish I could write a whole book that had just like them people talking that way. And so anyway, I would say as a whole, like my takeaway number two for the weekend was like a continuous expansion
of what it means to me to serve Jesus, to love him, to delight in true and good things. And there's been part of me where I didn't intentionally go, it's not technical biblical commentary. It's not of the Lord. I did not believe that at all.
Right.
But what I did realize, though, is I did not make any time for, again, wonder and delight and the humanity that comes through people telling stories. And it's funny because if we didn't look at it so technically, it's exactly what Scripture is
right.
doing. The exactly. vast majority of things are communicated to us through stories of God's
yep.
creation. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you can take the back half of Exodus, parts of Leviticus, you know, like you get to some things where it's like they're not stories about people. But even Leviticus, which gets a rap for being super lame and difficult to get through, the laws show up in between humans. Right. Like the context of those things are the stories of the humans. And then, you know, like, oh, now I understand why these new laws had to show up because of human.
Yeah.
You know right. what I'm saying? And so like the whole bit, this is one of the things that these guys just do such a very good job of, is that I've always found risky. Like I'm always real cautious at like interpretations and like retellings of things, because I'm like, you can twist it so bad. And I've seen people get so off course, and I can't go to a conference or people talking without just like my radar is up, and like I can hardly enjoy anything.
Sure.
It took me about 2 hours there, and then it was just like, this is a safe spot, man. Like these people love the Scripture. They love them. They delight in them. One of the sessions I went to was a guy talking about the theme of like floods throughout Scripture. And like the reason it fit the conference, I would study that, but it fit the conference because like it's a narrative thing. Like it's just, like you look at how cool Scripture is laid out, and we do it a disservice at reading it too technically, too wooden.
Sure.
But again, I've always pulled back from some of those things just because someone's gone wild with it. It's the same, but like it's the same category as people mistreating miracles. Just because some doofus is out there going to mistreat it doesn't mean that it's not happening, you know? And so anyway, it was a great encouragement to me, I think, to make sure that I'm not unintentionally walling off wonder. Because again, if I'm approaching the creator of the universe and there's not a wonder to it, then I'm missing out. And I do think one of the things where people have sometimes a hard time with their relationship with Jesus, not like willingness to be obedient or something, is like we lose a little bit of the sparkle, the things that children come like, yeah. like Jesus would say, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that was the second one. And then I'll wrap it up. This is the third one. Everything I was hoping would be true in our experience was, and like her, my daughter and I are both, I don't know, more introverted folk.
Sure.
And like, in fact, a lot of people are. They know who they're talking to here. Like a lot of these people are going to be introverted type of folk. And so they were really intentional about trying to help people, you know, interact with each other and stuff. We met some super cool people. Mm-hmm. And like, I think everything that I was hoping that she would get out of it, she did. And so that was exciting. And then just one of the things that I personally walked away from, in addition to the stuff we already talked about, was about creating things or making things. And I thought, if God is a creator and we are made in his image and likeness, then it would be surprising if it wasn't part of our nature to create, to make things. Mm. And it doesn't mean you got to be like a whittler, a woodworker or something. But it's like the of your mind, of your hand, of the things that are in you becoming a thing that is external that people can otherwise see and do. And I thought, you know, those things aren't I just thinking about the fellas around me, and I'm not sure that we would celebrate those types of things. Like it would almost be like, hey, look at the shelf I made. You'd be like, okay, dude. Like I don't think most of the guys, my friends would show me, because they'd be like, why would this guy doesn't care that I made a shelf? Yeah. And I was thinking about like a few friends of mine. Is a guy who's like he's a good woodworker. He makes tables and stuff. And I thought, you know, I'll probably check up. I see him every couple of weeks. I'm like, hey, how's your Bible reading going? How's things going on in your family? But like, I don't know, man. You're making something with your hand. Like let me see your table. Let me see that table you pulled together, my man.
That's
or
cool.
like. people who take photographs or people who paint pictures or people like I was thinking about my how I spend most of my day at work. Like, I don't make things. I'm right. Like, I'm just pushing information around, and it's not this righteous work, I guess. But like, is my life even set up in such a way that I have a chance to reflect the creator in me as somebody who creates things? And I can't land it tangibly, so maybe you feel free to ignore, but like, it feels like we might be missing out on some experience of life if we do not have outlets of creativity and things that you make. And it could be you make dinner.
I was going to say, yeah, that's me.
It could, right. And, cooking. But it's not, but like, and it's, there's an element to it that's like I made garbage and I put it out on the curb. No, not quite. That's not what I mean. I don't mean like what's left over. I mean, an intentional thing. And so maybe not every dinner is this. Not every photo you take is this. Not sure. Every practical, like things you do during the day has to be this. But like, you know, I wonder if there's something about making sure that there is time in your life to be able to do something that feels like out of the innards came the outards, mm-hmm. and create like our Father does. And I don't know anything else more tangible to it, except for it feels like that's the thing that we refer to him as, is this. It can't surprise me that we are made for that, and that everybody in some way or another is likely made for that in some way. And so what I realize is that, like, I don't think I have any avenues of which I am actively encouraging that, or even thinking about if I give most of my week to not that, do I need to be more intentional about finding space to do that? Something like that. And again, it goes in with the first thing I was talking about, which is like, oh, I made sure to take some time out to, I don't know, make a bowl or something out of my lathe if I had one. And you were like, well, I mean, aren't there plenty of other righteous, like Jesus, things to do in the world? I'm like, I don't, maybe we've drawn a line too firm in places of what is or what is not following, or what it looks like to follow in Jesus, to delight in your creator. And again, this is coming from the heart of people and of me, who's not like, I want involved in every thing that Jesus is doing. And so I'm not like, I want to make a bowl. I don't want to serve the poor. That's not it at all. Right. But like, what life am I calling people to delight in?
Right.
And am I, and like, those are like that type of thing. You don't need money for that. There's people, and frankly, Dan, it made me think of some Zimbabwe folk, and it made me think of some other folks that we saw in Ethiopia and places like that, where you're like, where is this joy coming from? These are people who are like, out of nothing, are creating games to play, mm-hmm. or will draw a picture in the sand or in the dirt and bring other people like, look what I created over here. And then much more of their lives ends up being things like that, out of poverty, than the nothing that I'm doing in my excess.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't, okay. Like, something seems right about that. I just don't know how, I don't have a finer point to it. But anyway, that was the Hutch Moot. It was very, very cool. And like, there was a vibe about halfway through, last anecdote, about halfway through, I thought, this feels like Bible Project-y type of stuff. Like, feels like these type of people. Like that, like these folks would know each other. And so I looked it up, and like, they had actually brought, Tim Mackey had gone in from the Bible Project, and during they had a Hutch Moot during over COVID, and like, he had given one of the talks. I'm like, well, that's super cool. It'd be awesome if they were going to, like, they'd have him as like the keynote speaker or something like that.
Sure.
We waited till Sunday to see, because they were going to announce the keynote speaker and they were going to do that performance or whatever. And they said, we're going to do like two keynote speakers. I'm like, okay. And it's the two dudes from the Bible Project next year. That's and I awesome. Said, well, whiz bang. Now I don't know. I feel like I got to go back, but the tickets are hard.
I was going to say, you better peruse that website the second it opens.
I know. I'm going to be there clicking at midnight or whatever. There's people who are like, hey, it's been going on for like 15 years. And they said, like, I just got back after like 5 years because we had a hard time getting the tickets. And they fed you every meal, breakfast, lunch, dinner. And like, had good gluten, you know, like tolerant type of options for people who needed it. And like, the guy who did the cooking would show up and tell some kind of story from his childhood before every dinner. And then if you listened, you would hear, he would talk about his experiences, and then foods from that story was what he was serving.
That's so cool.
The whole thing was super cool. That's awesome. I was impressed. And it was something where like, it just felt like a very hard mix to find, is artistic people who revere scripture, who can be trusted to like tell stories the way God, like that feel like God's heart is in it, and yeah. use what are artistic liberties, but they're created faithfulness. And to find those people who just like, it was just, it was everything I was hoping that it would be. I was super glad for you,
man. That's amazing.
So anyway, I'm sorry. I know you guys are listening, and that maybe that feels a little bit like a dude sharing his vacation photos. That wasn't, I was hoping not to do that, but like, it was just, it was a powerful thing. And so what the my other encouragement is that, like, if you're not finding it in your pockets, there are people probably doing art in a way that is faithful to Jesus, that may not, like, don't give up. Don't give up. Because I actually, like, the number of people who performed there, I thought, I like this music. I just flat out do not like most of the Christian music on the radio. I don't like it. I don't like it as music.
Yeah.
It's noisy to me, and I feel like such an old man. Like, I'm like, but it just feels like, no, like as I'm guessing my parents might have heard Nirvana or something. Sure. Like, they would have heard that and like, this is just, and I'm listening to it, I'm like, yeah, sounds like righteous to me. Is what modern Christian songs sound to me on the radio. They just sound like a wall full of noise. If you find the same tune and the guy performed it like acoustically, I'm probably in. But like listening to people write everyday songs that recognize the goodness of God and that, but also have to raise their daughter. And those, like, right. very, again, singer-songwriter-ish stuff, I just felt like I really connected with them in a way that, like, felt like connected with God through those as opposed to, like, a prescribed worship number. And so, sure. And I felt I'd almost given up on that. I thought, like, I'll just have to go, I'll skip it. I'll just read the psalm myself or something like that. But like, I'm very glad to find it in lots of literature and people who write good devotionals and all kinds of fun stuff. So anyway, it's out there. Any questions or whatever, feel free to hit the complaint line, 515-517-0085, call or text. Thank you for sitting through my vacation photographs. But hopefully that's encouraging to you in some way.
That's awesome, man. Thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate all that. Yep.
Okay.
All right, you want to do...
Let's give out some advice.
All right. Dear... Live in the Path. My 98-year-old mother has spent the last 8 years in a nursing home. My siblings and I placed her there when her health declined to a point where it was no longer safe for her to live alone. Her mind is sharp, but she has a hard time getting around and caring for herself. She has made friends there and is loved by everyone who meets her. I live 65 miles away and visit her every 2 weeks. My brother lives several hours away and tries to see her every 6 to 8 weeks. My sisters live closer and visit Mom often. Mom enjoys these visits. The problem is the 8 grandchildren. Most of them live nearby and are either too busy or say they can't stand to visit grandma in the home. The ones who live farther away hardly ever call. My siblings and I have tried dropping subtle hints by telling them how much a visit would mean to her, to no avail. My worry is that someday they'll realize the mistake they made by not visiting her while she can still carry on a meaningful conversation. Mom never complains, but she has said she'd like to see or hear more from relatives. Why is it that people always have time to go to a funeral but don't take the time to visit someone special while they're still alive? I hope my letter convinces someone out there to find time in their busy schedule to visit a person in the nursing home.
Yeah, I mean, you only have to go to the funeral once. So, I mean, that's not quite fair.
Sorry.
I'm just saying.
I thought that one was going to end in a question of advice. Apparently that one ends in a just hope my letter helps out.
I don't know, Dan. What do you think?
I don't think I've ever been to a funeral where the family wasn't standing around at the cemetery plot saying, man, we really need to find a way to get together more often. Everybody says it, and then no one ever does it.
Yeah.
So some of these are families I've done, like, multiple family members, and I'm like, you haven't seen each other since the last funeral, right? Nope. You know, it's like, it's just people are busy. They have other priorities. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that's just what it is.
Sure.
I can look at my own family, and my children love their grandma, but they don't have the connection that they do to us. You know, it's another generation removed.
Yeah, right.
And you know, part of that's maybe grandma wasn't as involved, and part of it is they're just in different worlds. I don't know. It'd be nice, but you can't force them there.
Right.
You know, it's not going to be a good visit. It's not going to be enjoyable for either of them.
Yeah, I am cautious here, I think, I'm trying to think of the right way to say this. What is There's not enough, to be honest. Like, you would. It's hard to look at. So, like, let's say you're the daughter.
Yep.
It's hard to look at your mom and go, she's there by herself, and I am. I wish it would help. It would help. She would be not be there by herself as often if all the various people came in and saw her.
Sure.
And a way to solve that is to hope that your kids are great or the other grandchildren come to do it. But I think you got to be super careful on prescribing that it is what you want for a relationship from your grandkids to their grandmother. I'd be cautious about trying to make people feel guilty about that. Mm-hmm. Because again, it's just something that would be, you're trying to solve your mom's problems and you're trying to do it with your grandkids.
Sure. Yeah.
But like, I hate this because like this is my time of life right here. Is like I have very little peripheral time. I just don't.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? And like not because I'm busy at bowling night.
Right.
I have very little peripheral time with the four children that I'm trying to raise,
yeah,
and the ways of which we are paying for them to be risen and the stuff, the serving the church community. Like this is not, it's not a selfish existence. So I would not presume upon these grandchildren that they're like, oh, they could just, they're selfishly not baking it into their schedule to go visit grandma. Now, here's the thing though. The reality is that like, it's good for my kids to see the grandmother.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you still should do things like that, or write their grandmother. Like, there's not just one way to do this, but like, it's probably gonna feel real patchy. Like, the people that you often want to do the thing are the people who are hardest to be able to get to do the thing. It's kind of the nature of, you know, you don't appreciate your family until they're gone or they're moved away or something. Sure. Like that. And so I think it is, I think you should encourage them. I think that's right. I think I would be very cautious about making it a guilt thing. Mm-hmm. It is unfortunate. I think this is difficult societally. We've come into this with friends even. That so we're a homeschooling family, and so we had met a few other homeschooling families. The oldest, when everybody started, like your oldest kids were four or something like that. And so they're growing up together, and this is great. Homeschooling families tend to be a little bit bigger, so you're getting four, five, six, seven kids type, sure, of thing. And as soon as you get two kids in any given family that start hitting the teenage years, like you've got younger kids that would like to hang out, and like you don't, you're cabin people places to like all the various things that they're trying to do and teaching them how to be growing adults and sure, all the things. And so like, people you used to see twice a week, you're lucky to see twice a month. And then sometimes you get to a place where you're lucky to see them twice a year. And like that will change. All these children will make their way past this hump of time and be able to drive all themselves places. And then you know what? These are the same families you end up going on vacation with. And you could go spend a week or two, or you could meet every night or every once a week for bridge or whatever it is you do. You know what I'm saying? Like those rhythms can come back. But like, there's just a core part of life where it is just very difficult to do consistent things with people that you want to, because everybody's lives, sure, get real goofy. And so I don't think that's a reason not to go visit grandma. I think they should visit grandma. But like what is different for you, if I'm just was doing some rough math in my head. We said, did it say grandma's like 80 something?
95.
Oh, okay. She's 95. So like the daughter's probably 65, 75, somewhere in there, mm-hmm, right? And so the kids are probably, you know, at their youngest, you could be 40 to 50 or something for your grandkids. And so some of them, it may be hard to do. Sure. It. And it means something to you, but you can't make it mean more or try to guilt it to mean more for your grandkids. It's just not going to go. I think Dan's right. It's not going to go very well. I think you could encourage them. But people can also tell when you're laying it on thick. I'll give a personal anecdote. I am very, very bad at keeping up with people. Like, if you're not in my sphere, I just don't do a very good job of it. And so I will go months without calling. Like my grandpa, who's old, I think he's 90, he's getting there. And it doesn't take me but 5 minutes to call him, and I know it. And I have the time. I can, like, who doesn't have 5 minutes? It's right. It's a lie. You've got 5 minutes.
Right.
But it just bounces. It'll bounce from my mind. If I don't do it, Dan was talking about something earlier. If you don't write it down, if you don't do it right away, it won't happen.
Uh-huh.
And so there's things like that where, like, I just won't come back to things. And I know that it would be valuable to talk to him more often. In fact, one of my friends calls him more often than I do because he's a turd.
Yeah.
It makes me look bad. it's just not as easy as that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I have some sympathy for time, assuming that they're not jerk children. If they're just jerk children, then they're jerk children, and that sucks. I think it's right to continue to nudge them. It's right to continue to try to remind them. But, like, here's the thing. A lot of things that you're saying, like, you're going to regret X, it just never hits anybody. People don't often, like, look at their, like, oh, you're right. If you don't regret it now, you don't know what it feels like to regret it. And so someone telling you you're going to regret it, it just takes a special kind of person to actually change their behavior based upon that.
Yeah.
And so I just don't find it particularly effective. Try other ways.
Sure. Okay. All right. Secular says, you are a caring daughter. I, too, hope your letter does provide a timely reminder that the time to befriend people is while they are breathing. I suspect that many avoid nursing homes and care facilities because they consider them to be depressing. However, unless the patient/resident is so infirm that he or she can't be moved, nothing prevents a son, daughter, or grandchild from taking their relative out for a nice brunch, lunch, or dinner. The next time you visit mom, take one or more of your children along. It would lessen the responsibility of making conversation for them, and if you can take your mother out, the change of scenery might benefit all concerned.
Yeah, it actually does sound very selfish to me to say I'm not going to go visit her because I don't like it in there. She lives there.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if it's that bad, get her out.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. I like nursing homes.
Creepy.
Is it?
Yeah.
I like it. Like, I remember my great-grandparents, when I was little, we would go with them, and they would he would preach there. And then my grandma would lead, like, songs and stuff. And, like, you know, you get three or four people who might be able to put a clap together, and then some other folks who are just not particularly responsive. I think it's probably still connecting.
Yeah.
I think it is a great I don't like societally. Oh, sorry, we meant to say this earlier. Societally, this is difficult because of how far spread out we're able to be.
Yeah, right.
It would be different if your grandparents lived in your house.
Right, exactly. Yes.
Or in your village.
That's what I was thinking, too, something. Right? Yes, they're in the upper room.
Yeah, and so, like, it is. When I was giving that friend example, we're like, oh, man, like, shouldn't you be able to, like, maintain some, be able to do a popular Christian thing to say is to do life together? I'm like, life might be 20 miles away and not with the same groups of people doing the same types of things. And, like, It's a nature of how we live, and unless you're willing to do the commune, you have to be a little bit gracious with yourself about what it means to do life together. It's probably not the same thing as the first century; they were living much closer together.
Right, right.
And so, you know,
that's all there was. I mean, it wasn't.
Yes, yeah. Right.
I mean, yeah.
So you got to do it. You know, I get just be careful that we don't be like, oh, we're failing Jesus and each other because we're not breaking bread together, all the fellas, every morning before work. That would be awesome. But, like, I live, I don't know, 20 minutes from Mike, 35 minutes from Dan, about that from Buva.
Yeah, right.
Like, we're going to burn an hour trying to hook it together and do some kind of, you know, break bread in the morning and pray to the Jesus. Like, we'll do it maybe sometimes, but we do it here.
Yes, right.
So anyway, just be careful with it, I think, is the thing.
All right, we want one more, or are we good?
Yeah, no, let's do one more. That way Mike can weigh in.
All right. Dear Life of the Path, my wife continually dirties the floors in our home because she refuses to stop wearing shoes in the house.
Oh, dear.
She'll be out all day at work, running errands, etc., and then come home and keep her same shoes on. She has even done yard work and then come inside wearing those same shoes! !
Mercy.
It's a family trait for her. Her mother does the same thing in her house. We recently visited her aunt and uncle, both of whom were wearing outdoor shoes indoors. How do I convince my wife that our house is dirty specifically because of this?
Oh, wow.
Have these other people you've met, has their life come to ruin as well? Or, like, is it obvious that the whole world is falling apart given the situation?
Doesn't weigh on that part. This person is just very upset and used !! Across the board.
Whew.
I hate going to people's house where you got to take your shoes off.
Yeah.
Does it seem pretentious?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like putting my shoes back on.
Did you run back here? I said, yeah, I don't like to go in their place. Take off my shoes.
I don't. I mean, I guess I can respect it, or like people have nice carpet or something, but like it's the worst.
Is it because you wear boots and they're hard to get on and off?
No, they're slip-on boots, but overall, I just don't like to take my shoes off. What if I don't like to put that much thought into my socks.
It's a sock problem.
Well, kind of. I mean, at my age, I mostly have socks that match, but sometimes I don't, and I just want to roll in.
That's crazy. I only own one type of sock. I like...
What?
Yeah. That way I don't have to ever match them up. I go buy, like, I purge them every 12 months or so, or 12 months or so, and I just rebuy 12 pairs of the same sock, and that way whatever I pull out, match.
I don't think that you are a person that lies. However, it really felt like you were trying to search for the right amount of months for us to not judge you on your sock refresh.
I don't remember.
I do it every 6 months. I mean, I do it about 12 months or so.
Yeah.
I do
so
3 years.
I am kind of.
I don't think you're lying.
I'm telling you.
But the way that was presented felt really like, oh, crap.
It's a half story because I sometimes have like tall boys and shorties.
Yeah.
Those are the same.
Boys and shorties.
Because I don't look like a real. I wear dark black socks, and so I don't want to wear knee highs on my shorts when I'm out running or something.
Oh boy,
I look like a real Poindexter.
I've done the same thing in the last few years. All of a sudden, I do it like on Amazon. That way, I can see what I ordered last, and yep. I just order it again. Because I used to try to do it, and I'd go to the store, and I'm like, I don't. There's a stripe somewhere or something, yep. or on a toe, or I don't know. And they'd always mismatch. Like, I did it wrong. And it's been like,
what a life hack.
Speaking of that lamentation of my previous lives, there was a point in my life that I honestly thought that the pinnacle of luxury was never wearing the same pair of socks twice.
Ooh.
And so I would buy socks, I would wear them once, and then I would donate them and go buy new socks.
Oh, wow.
And now let me tell you, I did not have the money to be doing that.
Yeah.
I never heard of such a thing.
But I did.
Yeah.
How dumb is that?
I don't know. I bet it felt real good, though.
It was great.
Yeah. Fresh pair of socks is
great.
Nice.
Every single time. Never putting a pair of socks on again.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Now I try and follow Jesus.
Yeah. Okay. So where can you sympathize with this man?
It seems like he might be the one cleaning. And so that sucks. Like, if you're, constantly seeing dirt on the floor and having to clean it up every time she walks around. Now, I'm not saying that's not a him problem. That he probably just needs to be like, I mean, I'll do that once a week, and I'll take away most of my pains here.
Just a quick story. I've been a mechanic, a diesel mechanic, a construction worker. I worked at a tire factory, and I also did quite a bit of work at some underground mines. The type of level of mess that I bring in a house is not even paralleled to whatever this woman is doing.
Yeah.
Right? She's wearing outdoor shoes inside.
If the worst that she is doing is coming in after doing yard work, like you're still walking on top of the grass. It's not like you're filling your shoe with the grass and then dumping it out in there. Like it's just, most of it falls off on your way up the step or on the porch. And like there might be a clump or two or some kind of, unless you stepped in dog poop, that's the worst that can happen. But overall, whatever out and about mess he's insinuating that this woman is making, I'm having a hard time believing that it is that big of a deal. Mm. Even visually noticeable, really. I think he's just like, I think he's a clean freak kind of dude, and he's like, you brought in outside mess in here, and that kind of sucks because I got this plate. You could eat off the floor. Well, I mean, you could still eat off the floor, really. I just can't imagine.
Lower your standards.
Yeah, I just feel like she's not bringing in this big of a mess. This sounds like a completely him problem. Now, if she was going to be generous to him, she'd probably take her shoes off, right?
Right.
If my wife preferred that no one wore shoes in the house, I would begrudgingly do it. If someone else's house that I go to, you don't want to wear shoes in the house, then I, to their face, am happy to do it. But overall, I'm still irritated by it because, like, it just is, I don't like taking my shoes off. But, like, I'm just saying that this dude obviously is bent in a way that I think he's way overreacting when it comes to reasonable, you know, attempt about the shoes.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
It's not like they ask you to, like, here's the thing. It's like I've worn my underbreeches in a house before, and no one has said anything about it.
What?
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 What kind of story is this?
What does that even mean? I would hope that you've worn your underbreeches in your house.
Wait, you walk into someone's place wearing only underpants?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, and it went completely unnoticed. Because they were more like shorts. You know what I'm saying? They were like shorts under britches.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they just didn't want to say it out loud.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that guy's
they noticed.
Wearing his under britches.
I don't understand who I've surrounded myself by. Sometimes I think this is a good choice that I've done for the past 15 years coming up here. And then sometimes I hear, yeah, I've exclusively worn underbridges into somebody's house, and they didn't even take notice.
Well, here's the thing, my pants were super dirty, and it was either like go in their place in my underbridges or try to wear these super dirty pants. So I thought, well, this seems like a better plan.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, okay, so the advice is to, you're going to have to chill out, for one.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Chill out a little bit.
Get a Roomba.
Yeah, I think getting a Roomba is a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I sweep this floor all the time.
And this sucks.
We should stop.
Get a robot.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. If you cannot compromise to not sweep it but once a week, get a friggin' Roomba.
Now, once a week, I mean, there's no way.
I think it's got to be a mop situation. Like the dude that, I'm just telling you, like, I could walk in my house after a regular day's of work and you can't visually see that I've left anything in my house on the floors.
Yeah.
So he has to be worried about it on a microbial level.
Yeah.
He's a Lysol dude.
Hmm. Okay.
They do make a Roomba mop.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
I saw that in the Costco catalog today, and I tried. My wife is generally not on board for this type of thing, but I think she might agree.
I know a dude that's got one. Yeah. Problem is you have to refresh the water. So you either got to hard pipe some water in there, and then either you got to dump it out, or you got to hook it up to some plumbing so it basically like flushes itself.
Hmm. Oh, it'll drop it in a drain?
Any of you fellas used a bidet?
No.
In Japan.
That's a yes, then. Yeah. Ben?
No, just me and under the most ridiculous of circumstances.
I tried to use it in Japan. I was at the Nagoya airport.
Yeah.
And I tried to give it a squirt fresh, and I wasn't working. Or I don't know how to use it.
You should have never said those words.
Wasn't working. Like, you just waited, and you're like,
yeah.
Well.
Wait, did you have the one that had, like, 58 buttons on it?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. It's complicated. I thought I was hitting it to give me a spritz, and nothing
sang
happened.
Sang you a song? Sorry.
Wow.
Why do you ask? I don't want to know. Okay.
You think about getting one?
I mean, they make some. I was looking at the prices of just the seat or, like, getting a whole rig, but I wasn't willing to go in full bore on the rig.
Hey, you know what'd be awkward is when you buy a bidet at your place and then suddenly certain people start coming over more often and you figure out that they're just there to use your bidet.
Gross.
Yeah.
You would think about them differently.
Also, like the hot water at my house takes
takes a bit.
30 seconds to get up and rolling. And so I think I would end up paying for the electricity to heat the water and then I would still be getting a cold shot.
Oh yeah,
of whiskey.
You gotta do a tankless water if you're gonna do a bidet.
Up the caboose.
Yeah, I mean I don't think I want cold waters.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just doesn't sound good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not luxury at all. That feels like the opposite.
It's Poseidon's kiss, baby.
Yeah.
Is it the same?
It's like Abu Ghraib in there.
It's like a half enema.
All right.
How much can you turn this thing up to?
Did we close that? Is Abu Ghraib still open?
I'm pretty sure it's closed.
Okay. They're not going to tell you if it is.
That's true. That's not something they'd be like, we reopened it.
It's closed. Wink. Yeah.
I thought it was closed, but we got an order for 30 cold bidets.
We knew what was happening. All right. Segula says, oh gosh, according to the August 2024 issue of Consumer Reports, half of household dust is tracked or carried into homes from outside. The soles of our shoes can also carry viruses
what?
As well.
Hold on a minute. That can't be passed. Why isn't all of it? Like what? Doesn't all dirt come from outside?
No. It comes from your dead skin follicles.
It's not dirt.
I mean, it's pretty much the same.
Excuse me. All dust comes from outside.
No, dust is dead skin.
Dust is dead skin. Yeah, that's true. Dirt is not dead skin.
That when they clean out that, by the way, it's a sham. People cleaning out your ductwork. That's not a real service.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
What's coming out?
They suck stuff out of there.
It's a gypsy wagon. They bring the problem and the solution in the same van, and you're lying on them to prove that they did their job.
Oh no! I bought a camera from a Temu on an extendo thing. It was like 500 foot of cord in there. I can look at my own ducks.
Yeah.
You want to borrow a bullet?
The soles of our shoes can also carry viruses.
You could use
as
it
well.
To see how well the bidet did.
Okay, boom, you can't borrow it anymore. Never mind, it's a personal camera.
If they sold it as a bidet inspection camera, I would say no thank you.
Oh, man.
The soles of our shoes can also carry viruses as well as other unhealthy and unpleasant substances. Instituting an indoor/outdoor policy might help to keep your house cleaner, but the habits of a lifetime are hard to break, and your wife may have trouble changing. A workable compromise might be to have a doormat outside for scraping dust and debris off shoes. Suggest it to her as a possible solution.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, secular, because we're having all of these marital issues, and I haven't once thought, you know, a doormat might work.
I was going to ask about that. Like, isn't that the common solution?
Right.
I freaking mad at the door.
Have a doormat.
She blows right past that doormat. That don't mean...
Right, she's walking in the house with lawn clippings and viruses.
I think he's way overreacting. I don't know, man. My wife sweeps the floor in our house like 3 or 4 times a day. In disgust.
I never do that.
I wait till it accumulates into the corner and it's visibly noticeable, and then I go, we should do something about this.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I was shamed recently because I dusted my ceiling fan in our living room.
Yeah.
And I'm the closest to it. Like, I'm the one who's constantly up there.
Yeah.
And I have not done it once in a year and a half, and it was rough.
Oh, I don't think anybody does that, really.
No.
But I see it. Like, I'm ignoring it.
Oh.
You really just have to let it. Like, if you're going to clean the ceiling fan, there's like, if you're going to try to set up some kind of apparatus to catch the dust, I think you're a fool. I think you either go after it with a vacuum attachment, at best, but it's still, you're still going to get some on the bed, the floor, whatever's underneath the fan.
Yes, agreed.
What doesn't make any sense to me is this is some professional dust, right? Because almost all the other dust, if a good breeze come by, it fall off. But this dust
collects.
Is living on the breeze machine.
Right. Yes, it's some kind of weird coral reef.
It's there.
That's true. Oh, my gosh.
It's there because it wants to be there.
It rides the rails.
It's real gross if you like clean off your fan and then the fan works better. Like, that's how you know that you had an accumulation.
You're disgusting.
Agreed.
That's
just know. I'm making an argument for this. You don't have to. Okay. I'm disgusting. Okay. Thank you.
I mean, just know that you took out the SEAL team of dust. Like, all the other dust is just living its regular life.
SEAL team dust?
And this dust is, I mean, it survives. That fan be running all night.
Yeah.
Or all day. I mean, it's just sitting there whirring around, just shaking and bopping, and this dust is holding on for dear life.
Creating some stalactite of dust.
It's great at its job. Professional dust.
Yeah. All right. You're listening to Life from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us. We very much appreciate it. If you got any feedback on the show, hit us on the Life from the Path. Bob Eisenhower complaint line, 515-517-0085. Call or text. We'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.